so that this doesn't get translated directly onto the tape. This is part two of Patrick teleconference on facing the lower self, based upon chapter 6 in the book The Undefended Self by Susan Tsenga. And what I've gone through in the first half are the sub-points in that chapter, starting with facing the lower self and what that means from a spiritual perspective. What is the lower self? What is evil? The denial of the lower self. And I've just completed a description of three aspects of the lower self in terms of defending against life. And those primary defenses are pride, self-will, and fear, which are outlined in Pathic Guide Lecture 30. So the next point is what the lower self is not. And that's important because it's easy to think that every negative experience is an experience of the lower self, but that's not what the lower self is. So focusing on one emotion, anger. Anger in general is not a fun emotion to have. Not that we can't occasionally enjoy blowing out a little bit of anger, but in general, anger is anger because we are unhappy. It is a visceral, it's almost a defensive emotion, and it is designed to stop something from happening, to bark. It is the human equivalent of barking, to stop someone from doing something, to draw attention to stop the energy in a room. So that when we speak up in anger, people naturally turn around, stop talking, and wonder what's going on. Unless, of course, there is so much anger in the room that our voice is not the only one. Anger is not inherently an act of the lower self. Anger is not related to evil. Anger simply is. But anger is also not inherently righteous. You can be angry for no good reason. You can be angry because your toy got taken away. You can be angry because you weren't prepared to share and now you're worried, and your worry has made you feel threatened, so you bark back in distress. So anger just is. It's an indication that something is wrong, that something needs to change, that movement needs to happen or action needs to happen. That's all it is. It's a signal. Now, when anger is repressed and we're not allowed to express it, that's when we get in trouble, because the repressed anger doesn't go away. And what it does, if you can think of it like an emotion being like a small animal, and if it's allowed to just be who it is and do what it needs to do, and it's done, and then it comes back and sits down and waits for another opportunity or another situation to express what it needs to express. So I'm imagining a whole bunch of white mice in front of me, and like a bunch of little bells, and each white mouse contains a different emotion. And when it's time for anger to express itself, the anger mouse expresses anger, and when that's done and the action generates the action that it needs to generate, it stops something, it moves something, it addresses something, then the little mouse comes back and just sits down and waits until the next time anger is appropriate. But if you, in effect, repress that anger, emotions don't go away just because you don't express them. In fact, what happens is just that little animal, that little piece of anger, gets even angrier. Because now it has the original event, but it also has not been able to express itself. And it goes underground. It holds the energy in, and the energy gets more dense and to some extent more powerful because it's condensed. You've got a little mushroom cloud that's being held in. And the next opportunity it has to express anger, it may express a larger amount of anger because it's doing a two-for-one job. It's expressing anger over two situations, but it only has one event to express it at. Imagine that happening 50, 100, 1,000 times. We're not computers. We don't keep track of all this stuff. We lose count of the number of times where we felt angry, upset, and did not express it and swallowed it and tried to pack it away someplace. So humans are usually not very conscious of the extent of their repressed emotions. And therefore, when an opportunity comes and those emotions are allowed to come out, they whoosh out. They come out in droves. And we say, I wonder why I'm so upset. Why am I crying so hard? Why am I so angry? Why am I giddy with happiness when it was only a joke? Well, part of that is because we had other moments of anger or sadness or joy that had to be held back. And they're like little kids, let's go out and play. And they jump out and they put more energy into the event when they're allowed to express themselves than the situation actually calls for. That's one of the ways we distinguish between a feeling and an emotion or emotional reaction. So an example of that is, if I'm angry, if somebody steps on my foot and I feel pain, and I say, get off my foot, and they get off my foot, I'm done. Imagine if I was under a social situation where I could not express my irritation or fear of physical harm because I was subordinate to the people in the room, and they jostled me and stepped on my feet and I felt twinges of pain or threats of pain or discomfort all day long, and I wasn't allowed to express it. The phrase I use to describe what happens then is, in another situation, I do the equivalent of kick the dog. I try to find a situation where I can express that pent-up frustration and anger. And when I get that opportunity, all that frustration and all that anger goes pouring out in that opportunity. What does this have to do with the lower self? When we do that, we are, in effect, acting out some negativity. It's not just a matter of a pent-up set of emotions. We have feelings about not being able to express ourselves in the appropriate circumstance. So besides the fact that I was jostled in a crowd where I'm a subordinate and I'm not allowed to express my feelings, added to the anger and distress is resentment. And added to that can be a dozen other feelings. I can be angry that I took the job in the first place. I can be angry that the people I'm associating with are that inconsiderate. I can be angry that other people aren't looking out after me and that I'm on my own and I can't handle the situation, so I keep having to swallow the anger and distress. All those, you can feel it, is all going into me. It's being added to by a ton of other frustrations and negative feelings that were in there in the first place. It's making quite a soup. And then, when I have an opportunity to release these feelings, I don't necessarily know why I'm so upset and angry. And where the lower self comes into this is when I am furiously angry at the dog, or the child, or the spouse, or the news, my lower self will egg me on. My lower self will justify my behavior. It will tell me, you ought to be angry at that politician or that murderer. The dog wasn't supposed to do that. You've told the dog 1,000 times. Children should not be undisciplined. You needed to be angry at that child. And your spouse never listens, and it gives you a whole list of the times they didn't listen. So he deserved your anger. It may have been a bit too much, but that's okay. It was still well deserved. That's where the lower self, the negativity, mixes in to be natural and rightful, not righteous, but rightful anger, and allows you to act out negatively and act out with negativity, and tells you not to feel bad about it. Now, if you could imagine that happening day after day, month after month, year after year, where you suppress emotions from one situation and let them pour out inappropriately in other situations as a solution, and your lower self is encouraging you and saying you're justified, all you have to do is find any justification, and it's okay to let all these feelings out, even though they belong someplace else. This is how good people, caring, decent people, wind up creating negative, bad habits where they act out inappropriately, and they actually don't see it that way. Because, number one, they feel justified. They've built up the justification in their own mind. And secondly, they're not completely aware of where all these feelings have come from. So when the cause, the thing strikes a match or lights the tinder that seems appropriate, it seems like that was the situation that generated those feelings. But it only generated a few feelings, and it caught the rest of the feelings that you were repressing. So what I'm speaking of now is that the lower self is not anger. It is not a negative feeling. It is not grief. It is not sadness. It is nothing in particular. That is not lower self. What lower self is a desire to justify, hurt, and punish, in part because we have shifted from the original situation to a substitute situation. And we want to resolve one set of feelings in a different arena where they really don't belong. And when we're angry and we don't really know why we're angry and we're looking for justification, that's when it becomes blame. That's when it's your fault that I'm angry. I wouldn't be angry if you hadn't done this. And the question to ask is, why does that situation make you so angry? What is going on? Circling around to self-analysis and being willing to look at our lower self and our negative acting out. So what I was just expressing here is that lower self is not basic emotions. Lower self is channeling those negative emotions into actions that we claim are justified, where we are trying to hurt or punish someone rather than resolve a situation. So the next topic is uncovering the lower self. And again, I think her words are delicious. Susan Fasenga's words are delicious and juicy. She says, the lower self is a dangerous, exciting, and scary terrain for most of us. It is both repellent and attractive. While we find violence repugnant, it nonetheless fascinates us. Lower self energies give us a kind of permission to go places that we know we shouldn't go to. And it gives us justifications and excuses to explore territories that fascinate us, that hold danger, that hold negativity, and perhaps we shouldn't be in. So there's a collusion here in us between the energy of the lower self and our natural, healthy curiosity and our fascination with aspects of life that we don't fully understand. But if you follow that fascination and you follow that interest and curiosity from a positive perspective, that would create one result. But when you allow the lower self to tell you it's okay to shout in this circumstance, that person's guilty. So you can enjoy the sense of being righteous. Go ahead, inhabit that, because you have justification. The person did the crime or lied or whatever the person did. So in uncovering the lower self, what we need to see is how we have distorted reality and justified our negativity. And one of the previous teleconferences focused on the observer self, also covered in this book. And in that process of developing the observer self, we develop a process that can notice. And one of the things that we notice is, gee, that's a lot of energy going over there. That's a lot of anger going to the television screen or to the referee in the sports game. Is that, are we bleeding off from another situation into there? What are we doing? The observer self is what holds, once again, a referee position and says, what's going on here? Where does the anger come from? And begins to notice, oh, you know the other day when you got yelled at in front of the other people and you were angry and you were so upset that you weren't able to verbalize your feelings? And then 2 days later you're shouting at the television screen? Or you're upset about something that should only make you annoyed? There's a cause and effect there. There's a connection between those two events. That's the position that the observer self can take. So in uncovering our lower self, we need to start seeing beyond our immediate feeling, our immediate situation. And we need to bring in the equivalent of the larger part of us that holds other values. Values of tolerance, values of patience, values of love, values of wanting to see both sides of the situation. The defenses of pride, what Susan says is, the defenses of pride, self-will, and fear keep us trapped within a narrowly egotistic self-definition that further rationalizes our disconnection from others. And again, it is in the disconnection from others that we, in effect, become evil. When we don't care that we're wrong, when we don't bother to look because we do not wish to change our attitudes, that's where evil enters into the life of a good person. So if we're not aware of how the lower self enters into our lives and how it activates us, how it gives us these justifications, then it is, in effect, allowed to roam free and do whatever it pleases, as long as it allows us to feel good about who we are and what we're doing. But in the feeling good about, there's this voice that says, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be extra angry. There's this voice of justification that is encouraging us to go in a certain direction of negative acting out. And that voice is usually quite different than the voice that says, wait a minute, what's going on? What's happening here? That's a lot of emotion for a simple event. There's a difference in those two voices. So I'm laughing because I also did the teleconference on meditation for three voices, where you kind of sit down and have a discussion with the different voices in you. This is what it sounds like. You have to hear the voices, or you have to create a situation where you can observe those voices and notice. This is the work of self-examination. Again, she starts to mention the creative power of the lower self, the yin-yang, the fact that all energy just is energy. And you can use energy for negative purposes, and you can use energy for positive purposes, and it can feel good to exercise energy. It can feel good to run. The question is, are you running to help someone, or are you running to catch someone and punish them? Because then you feel exhilarated and righteous. The energy can be very hard to tell. It can be very hard to tell the difference between those two energies in situations. But that's our job as a spiritual being. If we do not bother to tell the difference, then we, in effect, stay children. We stay undeveloped beings for the rest of our life. And as undeveloped beings, we will live a life that is unenlightened. And an unenlightened life, which is not examined, may not be what we want our lives to be. So this is perhaps one of the genesis of the phrase, we create our own reality. Again, if you understand that your attitude is the one thing that you can control, that no one else can take from you, no one else can make you unhappy unless you agree that you're unhappy. So they can do anything they want to you, but if you simply decide, I'm okay, I'm happy. If not happy, content. If not content, at least I'm not miserable. There are degrees, but they are still controlled by you. You can also say, I'm a little bit unhappy or a little bit miserable, instead of I'm absolutely miserable and I want to fix this and it's your, and making a huge giant drama out of it. It is possible to be unhappy and just sit with that and hold it and try to create circumstances where you can move into a more joyous situation without a demand, without fear, and the demand being self-will, the fear being some invention in your mind that if I'm unhappy for 5 minutes, I'll be unhappy for 5 years, and without the defense of pride, which is, this isn't right, I shouldn't be unhappy, I deserve better. All of these defenses really don't address the possibility that under those circumstances, any reasonable person would be unhappy. So you are actually in touch with reality. It is an unhappy situation. And by truly sitting with those feelings, you may then become motivated to act to change those situations. Instead of drumming up a lot of emotion and getting very upset and acting out and moving, which will shift the feelings, but not necessarily address what created the situation in the first place. So there's a creative power in the lower self to move energy, and yet we are always responsible for the energy that we move. Origins of the lower self. The lower self is a natural quality of human beings. Everybody has a lower self. The lower self is activated in childhood, early in childhood, or you simply don't get everything you want. You have a lot of beings around you who get to do what they want, and they're all telling you what you can and cannot do. It is a reaction against circumstances that we don't like. So the lower self generates in childhood. Even good children who are good on the outside, takes a psychologist to go in there and find out if they're simmering with rage but have decided to play the game a certain way because they think they can make the game give them what they want. So appearances can be deceiving. And I'm just going to make a broad statement. Every human being has lower self. It is activated in childhood. But depending on 1,000 different qualities, who we are as a spiritual being, what our life, what our personality is like, what the circumstances are like, all those are going to impact how we deal with lower self energies, how they manifest, and whether or not, for instance, our family, and this is true of most families, will allow certain lower self energies license and the ability to move while repressing other lower self energies. What am I saying? Some families, many families, refuse to let children get angry. But they might actually be supportive of crying. Oh, poor thing. Yeah, you just cry. You just come over here and cry. We understand that. But if you're angry, I feel affronted. And you stop that. You don't you yell at me. And yet the source of both those feelings could be the same event. And so what happens to us as children is we realize that anger needs to be stopped and repressed, but this other feeling is encouraged and allowed to flow. And the energy from repressed anger may find the channel of the feelings that are allowed to be expressed. And so we become like a tree that has to lean a certain way because of interference. And the tree doesn't stop growing. It begins to grow in the direction that it is allowed to grow in. So the origin of the lower self in childhood, then the child does not stop feeling or living. The child simply finds ways for the energy to express itself and act out and move. So all of us are trying to find an acceptable way to move the energy of our feelings and to express ourselves. And depending again on our personalities, we will find the open doors we'll go through, and the closed doors, after battering on them for a period of time, we'll ignore them and go where the energy can move. The Patrick Guide uses a phrase called the mass image of self-importance, which refers to the childish quality that humans have that they keep throughout their lifetime. Many people are childish throughout their lifetime, meaning that they are only concerned with what they want and how they feel and getting what they feel is acceptable and holding at bay what they feel is unacceptable without trying to take a larger perspective. So by using the phrase the mass image of self-importance, the guy is expressing that egocentric position that makes decisions based on me and mine. So when I teach the three spheres of consciousness, the individual self-sphere, the universal self-sphere, and the universal sphere, the individual self-sphere, as we grow up as social animals, can begin to include family, friends, villages, nations. We can still have an individual self-sphere outlook, even though we include other people in our perception. But that is different from seeing another person's perspective who doesn't agree with us, has a different point of view, and is making us uncomfortable. So surrounding ourselves with people who agree with us only insulates us more and makes us ever more certain that our point of view is correct because everybody agrees with us. And the question is, have you ever looked at life from a different perspective? Have you ever gone outside yourself? Have you ever talked to or interviewed or read or explored other points of view so that you begin to see, I have my point of view, and it's not necessarily a bad point of view. And this person has their point of view, and it does interfere with mine. But what's going on here? And where can there be a meeting of these? And for instance, the phrase globalization that is thrown around a lot right now is about the different nations on the planet starting to find areas of compromise and areas of agreement so that they can begin to work in concert together instead of antagonistically only taking care of themselves. This is what I'm referring to when I talk about the fact that it is possible to grow into adulthood and still have a childish perception of the world and a lower self that acts out frequently and without regard for anyone else. Because very often, towns, nations, villages do the same thing. Nations can do the same thing, but they are acting out based on their own need and not seeing the larger reality, which not only would help others, but would, in the long run, help them. So I'm talking here about there's an innate lower self in child consciousness. The next point she makes is about karma and the lower self. And this gets into the spiritual qualities of Patrick cosmology and how Patrick looks at things. So in terms of lower self and karma, the way she expresses it is that every incarnation is just another rung in the ladder on the evolution of the spirit as it engages with negativity and learns to resolve it and become bigger, more aware, more enlightened, more willing to see other points of view. So incarnation by incarnation, karma is an accounting system to keep track of where you are. And if you do not feel comfortable with the idea of incarnation, you can think of it simply in terms of what have you learned in this lifetime. Most people don't believe the same things they believed 10 years ago. Why? Because we grew. Because we started to recognize other perspectives, other points of view. We lived our lives a little differently, and we expanded our knowledge of human behavior and of ourselves. So whether you wish to think of this in terms of incarnations, or you want to think of this in terms of just the different decades and the growth period in a single individual human life, the concept of karma can still apply. Being that, I believe it's an Old Testament phrase, you reap what you sow. So that if you put out a lot of negativity in the world, you will cause an effect, you will have that come back at you. When you're only talking about one lifetime, it's easier to see the cause and effect. On a spiritual level, if you do accept the idea of multiple incarnations, imagine if you would that you are receiving negativity in this lifetime because of negativity you put out in the world carelessly and inappropriately or with deliberate evil intention 5 lifetimes ago. It is very, very difficult for us to really accept that what's happening in our life today is fair when we do not remember how this was generated. Again, I like real-world examples. It's like being born with somebody with the feeling that there's somebody else's credit card debt, and you have inherited it. And you go through life with this huge debt, saying, but I didn't spend the money. I didn't buy the boat. I didn't buy the house. I didn't buy the things. I didn't get the pleasure. But I've got all the bills. That's what karma can feel like sometimes if you cannot connect cause and effect. Now, a lot of cause and effect happens right in this lifetime, so you don't have to go back to past lives. But in a situation where in this lifetime you are dealing with a very large number of negative circumstances, it can be supportive to consider that if life is fair, you bear some responsibility for this, and that by working with these situations, by attempting to be honorable, kind, understanding, generous, and loving, you can move through these situations with grace, despite their negativity or their seeming unfairness. In effect, what the concept of karma is, that you are working off karma by your attitude to what you're dealing with, so that you can grow spiritually simply by enlarging your attitude and seeing a bigger point of view and not choosing to act out and try to demand instant justification or instant justice for what you see in front of you. So what I'm speaking to here is that if we choose fear, if we choose revenge, from a karmic standpoint, we're building negativity. If we choose to attempt to understand, however imperfectly we enact that, we are choosing a positive attitude. So I don't really care to teach karma, and I don't want to shove it down someone's throat, and I don't know the attitudes of the people listening to this tape. But I wanted to mention that because a lot of spiritual philosophies work with the concept of karma. And the reason I wanted to mention it is that lower self likes to pretend that it doesn't deserve what's happening. And that by working with the concept of karma, we might be able to get a larger perspective that actually covers several lifetimes and realize that even though we don't understand what's happening, this negativity that's in front of us, this difficulty that we have to move through, may have been something that was set in motion by us. Now, even if it wasn't set in motion by us, even if what I'm saying is not true, you either move through it with grace and positive intention, or you go into fear and resistance and anger about it. I have found that simply saying whatever and embracing the situation allows me to move through a situation more easily and with a more positive attitude than simply saying it's not mine, this is not fair, and I'm going to kick my heels on the floor and cry about it. So that part leads me to a summary, and that is that the pathwork perspective of lower self, negativity, karma, incarnation, is based upon the idea that we are here to purify our soul. We are here to feel the negativity that is within us, to allow it to move without acting upon it. That, for instance, when we feel anger and we feel, well, I'm angry and it's unjustified, part of the purification is not trying to find a target for this anger. Allowing the anger, allowing the movement, working with the anger as best we can, find therapy, find whatever tools you feel you need to do this. To allow the anger, to allow the feeling, but to not attempt to justify it by pinning the reasons on a particular circumstance unless it is momentarily justified. So someone steps on my toe and I'm angry and they did it and I can be angry at them, but once they get off my foot, once they move away and let me be, if I continue to be angry, that is very likely not about the circumstance. That's very likely about something else. Now, I'm not talking about residue. It might take a few moments to calm down. But to be angry for an hour about your foot being stepped on instantly means that something else is going on. And the pathway perspective is that's your opportunity to start taking a look at what's going on at your inner life. And working that out and purifying it to the place where you are appropriately angry on a given situation in a given time period. And you allow your feelings to move, and you don't try to solve other situations with the wrong situation. You don't do displacement. That in that way, we are clearing our soul of negativity. And whether you believe that that is a several lifetime process or a single lifetime process doesn't really change the process itself of self-analysis, of looking at your feelings and looking at your actions and looking at your negativities, finding out where they are coming from within you and addressing as carefully and as responsibly as you can the causes that you find. So that's the presentation on facing the lower self. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. And I have agreed to do up to a one-hour session after this ends to answer questions if you don't feel like being tape recorded for your questions. But if anybody has some right now, I'm willing to answer. Okay. So we'll end this presentation, and I thank you very much for being here. I've enjoyed working with the topic. And for those of you who wish to join me, I'll be back on the phone in about 20 minutes. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Jan.
Bye.
Bye.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jen. Bye.
Bye, honey. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.